Welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
I'm Joshua Black.
Say it.
Join us.
Never.
Hi, my name is Lola, and I'm Joshua Goddard.
And Fighting Black.
This is Please Leave a Message, and this is an impromptu recording, and we are called Please Leave a Message because we have a phone number that you can call, and that phone number allows you to leave messages, but nobody ever calls it. So please call it, because then you can be on the show, and it will be really fun. And we started out a year ago, and Jess has a lot bigger audience than I do, and so he was able to get people to call in. But after he was off the show, nobody called in anymore. But if you want to call in, the number is 801-SKETCH-1. That's 801-753-8241. Please call us. Tell us your scary stories. Tell us your silly stories. Tell us your name and hang up. Just do something. I want to hear from you. The whole point of it was for it to be interactive. Or if you don't want to do the phone call thing, you can send me a message on Gmail. Our email address is pleasepodcast@gmail.com. And you can also find pictures at messagepodcast on Instagram. And our website is pleaseleavemessage.com. If that wasn't confusing enough, another legacy of Jess. He didn't set up anything the same. The podcast is called Please Leave a Message. The website is Please Leave a Message. The Instagram is message podcast, and the email is please podcast. I don't know what he was thinking. Oh, I love the guy to death, though. So anyway, we're coming up on our one-year anniversary. This will either be episode, I don't know. This will be episode 3 or 4, maybe 5. I don't know.
I prefer to be on prime-numbered episodes.
Okay, I will keep that in mind. All right. What have you been up to, Josh?
Joshua. Got a new job?
Oh, yeah. A new job.
Got a new job? Left the old job?
Joshua has been on the podcast before. You're on a pretty popular episode, I think, if I recall.
Sweet.
I think you're in the top 10.
I told all my family to listen to it. I have a big family.
That always helps.
No one listened to your...
Yeah, I don't think they did, but I told my family to listen to it.
I have to keep doing it because I'm paying for the service to post the podcast. And so if I don't do it, I feel like I'm wasting money.
There you go.
So it's a bit of a, I can't think of the word.
At least it's fun.
It is fun. No, but what I'm saying is that it's, see, I have this problem and it's really bad, especially since I do a podcast. When I go to say things, the words that mean those things are gone. It happens a ridiculous number of times in a day. Justin Cutler and Joshua Black.
Mm. Number one.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're 7.
Okay.
That's nice.
At least 5.
Number 7. You passed up Emily. She used to be number 2. Wow. Now she's not. So, yeah, most I get about 200 on the top 10 episodes, and the lower episodes are, I think, around 100 at least.
I would never have used the phrase more popular than Emily to describe myself.
Moving up, Joshua.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, my top episode has 484 downloads. So, that's pretty cool.
I listened to my episode 3 times.
Well, it counts all 3.
Okay.
Good. Yes.
So. I do have a big family, though. When BJ and I got married, we invited parents and siblings.
Okay.
And she told her friends this. You're not invited to the wedding. Don't feel bad. We're only inviting parents and siblings. One of her friends walked by and they had a fight after because she's like, you said only parents and siblings. I walked by your house. There was like 50 people there. I'm like, yeah, parents and siblings. You just got one brother.
Thanksgiving's coming up,
mm-hmm.
And it's my mom's side of the family. My mom's side of the family's big, so we usually schedule a church to do Thanksgiving at. And there was one a few years ago, I don't know how long ago, but 90 people is normal for Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. So the way that we make the mashed potatoes is they go in a big bucket, mm-hmm. like a big bucket, and then we have a power drill. With a painter's stirrer attachment on the end. And it,
that's great.
That's how you make the potatoes. It's fantastic. It's good times.
That was great.
Let's do a found audio thing.
Sweet. I like found audio.
So
did you just find audio in your pocket?
I did. Look at this thing. Look at that.
That's so adorable.
This is my my music player. This is by, you know the Jake Giles Band?
Nope. Never heard of them.
You've heard their music.
I have?
Yeah. You have. Their song, Love Stinks.
Oh.
Well, I like Love Stinks. May I hear it?
After the song.
It's too precious for you, Becca.
No, after the song. Because everybody's heard Love Stinks.
Mm-hmm.
They also did Angel in a Centerfold.
And the cover is reminiscent of the Violent Femmes album, Why Do Birds Sing?
Mm. So here we go.
This is the story of a young couple in Portland, Maine. Waiting for her husband Don to return home from work, she reaches for a can of anchovies. As she spreads the tiny fish across a piece of lettuce, she notices a small note at the bottom of the can. Written on it is a telephone number. Curious, she dials and is told,
"Don't move, lady. We'll be right over."
Placing the phone back on the hook, she turns to see three smartly dressed men standing in her kitchen doorway. Before she realizes what is happening to her, she is rolled tightly in long sheets of cellophane, transported to an international airport, and placed on a waiting jetliner. All this being too much for her to comprehend, she passes out. Upon awakening, she finds herself in a strange, foreign-speaking nation. Alone, fearing her escape impossible, she seeks comfort in the arms of a confidential agent. With a trace of her kiss still warm upon his lips, he betrays her to the hands of three scientists who are engaged in diabolical avant-garde experiments previously performed only on insects and other small, meaningless creatures. Using her as their subject, they are delighted with the results. For the first time, a human being is transformed into a... Meanwhile, back in Portland, Maine. Her husband, Don, now chain-smoking 40 packs of cigarettes a day, sits at a local bar and has a few beers with the regulars. Bored, everyone's attention turns to the television set that just hangs from the wall.
Welcome to Bowling for Dollars.
Suddenly, Crazy Al says,
Say, Don, there sure is something familiar about that bowling ball.
To which a terrified Don replies,
Oh my God! That bowling ball! It's my wife!
And the lesson we learn from this story is, next time you place your order, don't forget to say, No anchovies, please.
I looked for that for years. I heard it on Dr. Demento. And so every time I came across a Jake Giles album, I checked it. And I might have even overlooked the Love Stinks album once or twice, thinking, that one's too mainstream. And then I finally found it right there on the Love Stinks album.
It's beautiful. Don't whisper. Like, speak so that we can hear you.
Just so you know, these two mics pick up really good.
Oh, okay, so I can whisper.
There's no point in whispering. It will hear you.
My roommate at SEU in college, her name is Carolyn, she had all of Dr. Demento, she had all kinds of old, like there was one song called The Gorilla Man or something, or and then Guitar Zan. Yeah, like we would listen to all of those. And
I have the 45 of Guitar Zan.
Yeah.
It's even a promo copy, not for sale.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
We had them all on our little tape and we just put it in our little car and drive everywhere and listen to them.
So I had a couple hundred Dr. Demento tapes mm-hmm. that I just recorded off the radio, and I packed everything I could up in my bedroom because I didn't know if it would still be my bedroom when I got home from my mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all gone when I got home.
Oh.
I don't know what happened to them. And then about a year ago, I was digging around in my parents' house and I found my cassette tape box. I was like, yes!
It was like more than Christmas.
It was like... It's alive!
Oh, that's good.
So yeah,
I
found my Dr. Demento tapes. I didn't find all my tapes, mm-hmm. just the Dr. Demento box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that the other tapes will also show up, because I had another, like one of those banker boxes mm-hmm. that was just full of cassette tapes, and that one has never resurfaced. But it was a long time. I only found the Dr. D tapes like a year ago.
Yeah.
So...
I only had 4 Dr. Demento tapes. I would keep 4 rolling weeks.
Oh, rotate them?
Just rotate them out.
Yeah, I was too much of a, I've always been too much of a preservationist. I just want to save everything.
My tape recorder, well, the recorder on my radio, the speed wasn't quite right.
Oh no.
So if you played it on anybody else's tape deck, they were really slow. They didn't sound good. But they played fine on mine.
That's funny. Do you still have those?
No.
Dang it.
It was only 4 tapes, and when I left for my mission, I boxed up all my CDs, and I gave them to Toad so my family wouldn't have access to them.
Okay.
And then everything else disappeared.
My room was surprisingly still my room when I got back.
My room became the sewing room, and my stuff got boxed up, and it got put in the basement, but they had a flood.
Ooh.
So a lot of my stuff wasn't stuff anymore. It was more my box of mold.
Yeah. For the eclipse that we had recently, I went up to Rexburg so I could be in the Path of Totality, which was...
That's cool.
Which is just a cool name for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It was worth it. That's awesome. I'm going to have to chase down more of these things and become a world traveler just so I can see more of them, because it was just amazing.
That was my plan, too.
And but while I was up there, I've been talking years about needing to interview my grandfather. He's 91 now, and he was a World War II vet. And I'm like, yeah, we just need to interview him, get his war stories on record. And so I finally did it. I did it for the, because I work at the school, and we actually have a veterans project. And so I was able to take all the school's equipment and go and record him.
That's really cool.
So I got all of his war stories, but it was funny. At the beginning of the interview, I'd ask him a question, and he'd give me a really short, like, terse answer. Mm-hmm. And then after I'd asked him 3 or 4 questions, he just went into it, and he just kept going and going and going. So he told me the story of the entire war, and then afterwards, up until like the early 70s, he just kept going.
Wow.
Or late 70s, because he went all the way through the Rexburg flood, which was in 76. Mm. He told me all about the flood and all the damage they had in the mud. Yeah, crazy stuff. But that was really cool getting to listen to him. And so because I was up there recording him, I just, after I did the stuff for the school, I turned off the recorders and I turned them back on. I said, okay. And I asked him the 6 questions that I asked for the podcast. So it was kind of funny. Like some of the questions, like when I got into Dr. Demento, Dr. Demento would play Spike Jonze stuff. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa loved Spike Jonze. And so he and I kind of bonded over Spike Jonze a little bit. So I got to the music question of the podcast questions. And I asked him that. And I don't know if he was just tired or just that he's getting old. He's like, well, I've always liked good music. But I can't really tell you what I like. I thought that would be an awesome question for you, and you would go off on all this stuff. Because he's got a Cylinder record player that's restored, and he plays it. He's got an Edison Diamond Disc player, which plays those really thick records. Have you seen those?
Nope.
I think they're like a 10-inch record. And then they're really super thick. They call them Edison Diamond Discs. Just super early stuff. They're made of asphalt.
Awesome. I once saw a copy of Fahrenheit 451 bound in asbestos.
Oh, really?
So that it wouldn't burn.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
That's one for the collection. I like finding weird stuff like that. Yeah, I still need to get my copy of... Because you know how obsessive I am about Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds.
Yes.
So there was an edition that they sold on a USB thumb drive, mm-hmm. but the thumb drive was shaped like the tripod walker, like that.
Okay.
Oh, cool. I need to get myself that. Whose phone?
That was mine. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I don't care.
Turn it off.
Usually mine's the one that makes noise. So.
Oh, I got an email. Holy Susan? Crap. Harbor Freight Tools is having a huge welding sale. That was worth interrupting the podcast. Let me tell you a job application story, right?
Okay.
I got a call from a recruiter. No, Justin got an email from a recruiter, and he's like, hey, do you still want to change jobs? And I'm like, I could talk to a recruiter. So he's like, okay, I'm going to send this lady a resume. So I'm like, cool. Bump the thing. So a second after I decided to turn in my resume to a recruiter, my phone dies.
Oh, no.
So she's calling me and leaving messages, but it's coming through Google Hangouts because I've got no active phone, but I've got an old phone that has Wi-Fi connectivity.
Oh, okay.
But not like LTE coverage anywhere. So while I'm in my house and in our office, I can get phone calls. But they're kind of sketchy because it's not my primary device. So it'll ring and I'll go answer. And then there's like an 8-second delay where they can talk and I can talk, but we can't hear each other at the same time. So, it's okay, though, because my new phone is going to come in 3 days. It took 3 days to talk to a recruiter the first time, do a phone interview with the company, do an in-person interview, and get hired. Like, it was a 3-day process. And after they offered me the job, my phone arrived in the mail that afternoon.
What timing?
Exactly. Recruiter's like, what is wrong with you? It's like you're not even into this. I'm like, well, I wasn't even looking for a new job, like, yesterday, so give me a little bit of a break.
Right. That is funny. All right. I'm going to ask you some of the same things I was planning to ask Jess, because it's just that time of year and I don't care.
Sweet.
So, talk spooky to me. In other words, what kind of Halloween media do you like?
I like zombie movies.
Okay, what zombie movies do you like?
Okay, when I was a little kid, I'm talking like 6 or 7. I watched this made-for-TV Halloween movie, and there was this girl, and she got killed in a car accident, and then she came back to murder her whole family. And it was the kind of thing that I'm sure if I watched it again, it's like not scary at all.
Right.
But there was a scene where this ghost was bringing a pizza cutter upstairs to murder her mom. And she was rolling the pizza cutter up the banister of the stairway. Right.
Okay.
And that was like the creepiest image I had ever seen or heard in my entire life. This is the sound of the wheel turning on the wood as it went up. And just no hands holding it, just pizza cutter riding up. I was terrified of pizza cutters for years. I was like, oh my gosh, what's that sound? And it was a fairly common sound. And so I would hear it at night and just wake up terrified.
Oh my gosh, it's scary.
Wow. Do you happen to know the name of this?
No clue.
And you've never been able to track it down?
Uh-uh. Oh, that's man. The only scene I remember, and it's hard to look up a movie like that. I did track down one of my old scary books that I read when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah?
I was into vampires like nobody's business. I could read vampire stories all day, and I started early, and I read everything that I could find. And so when the library ran out of new stuff, I had read all the children's books on vampires and all of the adult books on vampires. I read Dracula all the way through in third grade.
I've never been able to make it through the first chapter.
And
right.
You know, so I found a copy of this book in, like, the library closed for the summer and they had a bookmobile.
Okay.
And so it had a smaller selection of books, but it had different books.
Right.
And so I read this book and I remember the subtitle was The Initiation. And it was part of a larger series.
Okay.
And because I didn't remember the real name, and I didn't know who wrote it, I knew that it was a vampire story, and it was set in a high school, and it was kind of a love story and kind of a murder story, and I kind of like that about vampires is, you know, they're not all bad, but the ones that are bad enough for all of you. So after the internet was invented, I was like, you know what? I bet I could use this to find old things.
Right.
So I searched for this book, and I knew the subtitle was The Initiation, and I knew it was, you know, set in a high school, and it was vampires on a sports team, dead, exsanguinated bodies in lockers, etc. I knew the basic elements of the story, and that it was called The Initiation, and I could still never find it.
Oh.
It was not until 2012. I'm living up in Wyoming, and I'm like, I'm gonna find it. And I just typed a description of the story, thinking that some of those words will match in a description of the story in an Amazon search or something. And it came up, and there it was. I recognized the cover, and it was called The Initiation, and it was about vampires in a high school on a sports team, and dead bodies in a locker, just like I thought. And then I looked at the real title, and it was called The Twilight Saga, colon, The Initiation. And the only reason I found it then was because Twilight was popular and the Twilight Saga was a thing people searched and it came up in the search results. It was more popular now. Like, so I bought it, you know, of course.
Right.
It's still a great story, but I curse Bella Swan every time I think of it because that's what it took to get it to come up.
That's amazing. What good Halloween movie you like?
Oh, you know, I am the complete opposite of him. It's like, the cutesy Halloween cartoons like Charlie Brown or Hocus Pocus. I loved those growing up, that show. Like, I think we were, what, 15 when that show came out or whatever. Anyway, just the cute Halloween stuff, because working at a preschool for many years, I kind of didn't go into the gory stuff. We talked about cute things, you know?
I don't like gore.
Yeah.
But I like spooky stories. So I get really excited when scary non-R-rated movies come out.
Yeah, those are good.
Because I know they're not, they're going to be good stories, and they're not going to be relying wholly on the fact that they can just splatter blood everywhere they want to.
Right. I like shows like What Lies Beneath with Michelle Pfeiffer in it. That was like PG-13, a little jump scary. I like shows about spirits, you know, like they're trying to save somebody, or, you know, or trying to solve a murder and helping the person who's alive solve the murder. Like, I mean, I can handle stuff like that.
I just barely watched The Ring for the first time.
That's a little too much for me.
Oh, that was good. It was a really good story.
I like The Ring for all the reasons she didn't list.
Yeah.
As far as revenge goes, you know, ghosts come back, get their revenge. It's so heartwarming. And I just don't go for it. I like the angry dead.
Okay. Yeah.
They're dead and they're pissed about it. Mm-hmm. And they're coming for it. Because there's nothing you can do about that. If a ghost wants to murder you, ghost comes in your house and murders you. You going to lock the door? Well, I'm going to go through doors. Oh, well, there's no weapons in here. I don't care. There's air. And I'm mostly made air. You got to breathe something. When I was a little kid, I would watch scary movies about dead people who wanted to murder you back, and they would terrify me, and I would go to bed, head hid under the covers, just scared out of my mind, and that was like my favorite Halloween thing ever.
The thrill of it all.
See, I wasn't into that stuff until I got older. When I was... Okay, this was when we still lived in Rexburg. So it was before I turned 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And I walked into the room. My dad was watching The Poltergeist. And so he didn't know I was there. And so I was just kind of... watching a little bit. Oh my gosh. It was the pool scene where the tree's eating them.
That show was so dumb to me as a kid. The scariest thing about that show, in real life, that girl died of the flu. That is what scared me. The little blonde bitch, she died of the flu the next year, and that is what scared me the most about that whole Poltergeist thing.
I only saw that little bit, and it terrified me for like nights and nights. But I shouldn't have been watching it in the first place, so I was too scared to tell anybody that I'd even seen it. And so this thing is terrifying me, and I couldn't tell anybody about it. I always liked, even when I was little, I always liked giant spider movies for some reason. So I really love Eight-Legged Freaks, because it's a giant spider movie where they finally had some budget behind it, and it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's not scary, but it's just flat out fun.
I did like the old It show, the clown one.
I never watched that.
Yeah, it was like watching it now. Like, that's so dumb.
I think
the new one I won't watch, but the old one, oh, that was so dumb. But it was so scary as a kid.
Everyone our age watched it.
Yeah.
Everyone, not me.
I didn't see it back then either.
Okay, because my parents were like very, like the fact that my dad was watching Poltergeist, you know, my mom wasn't home.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it is with me and him, me and Joshua.
And so, and I don't even think my dad's really into that kind of thing. Uh-huh. I think he was just watching it because mom wasn't home and we had cable. So, yeah.
That was funny. With the It movie, I think I was like sixth grade or whatever. My friend had a really cool basement, so we wanted to do a haunted house down there as an It theme. And she dressed up like this clown. Wasn't even scary. I was like trying to get a costume of a spider. People are going through and they're like, what is this? We're like, it's the It theme. And nobody got it because we were so bad at the costumes. They're like, oh, this is cute. No, it's not. It's not cute. It was so funny. Oh, my goodness. Fantastic. That was like one of my favorite Halloween memories.
That reminds me, when we lived in Rexburg, one of our great pastimes was to create spook alleys in Grandma's basement.
Fun.
So her basement is laid out where it's got a big like family room, and then there's a hallway that's one of those circular hallways. Mm-hmm. And it's dark back there because it's before building codes made you have big windows in the basement. Mm-hmm. If you're in that basement, good luck.
Scary.
So it was dark back there even at noon, and so we would build a spook alley along that hallway, and we'd build one, and then we'd send all the kids through it and scare them, and then we'd say, all right, and we'd tear the whole thing down and build up a new one.
Nice. great.
So, yeah.
What else are you going to do? You're going to learn how to market your haunted house? Your kids.
Yeah.
Right. You have 3 customers. Once they've seen it.
And that's it. It's usually mom and dad or a brother, right?
Well, so my grandma, she babysat kids.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a ton of kids at her house. So there'd be 15, 20 kids usually there. But a portion of those were me and my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the privileged kids there. So we were the ones that would build the spook alleys because we were allowed to.
Right.
And then they could go through it, but, mm-hmm. and they couldn't help be part of it.
You were the privileged ones.
Yes. That was good times, though.
Yeah.
That was super good times. All right. Let's do another one. All right. This is a classic oldie.
The Velvet Ribbon. A story. Once there was a man who fell in love with a beautiful girl. And before the next full moon rose in the sky, they were wed. To please her husband, the young wife wore a different gown each night. Sometimes she was dressed in yellow. Other nights she wore red or blue or white. And she always wore a black velvet ribbon around her slender neck. Day and night she wore that ribbon. And it was not long before her husband's curiosity got the better of him. "Why do you always wear that ribbon?" he asked. She smiled a strange smile and said not a word. At last her husband got angry, and one night he shouted at his bride, "Take that ribbon off! I'm tired of looking at it!" "You will be sorry if I do," she replied, "so I won't." Every morning at breakfast, the husband ordered his wife to remove the black velvet ribbon from around her neck. Every night at dinner, he told her the same thing. But every morning at breakfast and every night at dinner, all his wife would say was, "You will be sorry if I do, so I won't." A week passed. The husband no longer looked into his wife's eyes. He could only stare at that black velvet ribbon around her neck. One night, as his wife lay sleeping, he tiptoed to her sewing basket. He took out a pair of scissors. Quickly and quietly, careful not to awaken her, he bent over his wife's bed, and snip went the scissors, and the velvet ribbon fell to the floor, and snap, off came her head. It rolled over onto the floor in the moonlight, wailing tearfully. "I told you you'd be sorry."
That's great.
I had to, so that one's off of this record that I found at thrift store. Where did it end up?
I'm just thinking, "my head will fall off" is a much better explanation than "you'll be sorry."
Right? That's the funny thing about old stories like that. It's just people are... Like, sometimes I watch... I recently watched all the episodes of The X-Files. The new season was coming out, which I still haven't watched. But I watched all the old ones. And I realized I had seen far fewer of them than I thought I had back in the day. And there were so many episodes where I was just like, if you people could just talk to each other the way normal people talk to each other, half of these problems wouldn't be problems.
Seriously.
It's like, speak clearly and explain yourself. Don't be so mysterious about every stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I found that story on this record. Selections from the Haunted House and Other Spooky Poems and Tales. It's a Scholastic record from 1976.
Ooh,
no,
that's cool.
Even older, 1970.
How dare you lie about the oldness of it?
What's that?
How dare you lie about the oldness of it?
Oh, yeah. I'm terribly, offended. Terribly sorry. Forgive me, please. But it was funny because Jess does a comic jam every month. And a comic jam is where we get together at a comic book store and then we do collaborative improvisational comics. So
you draw them or you try to find them in the comic store?
Draw them.
Okay.
And so we get into groups say a group of five or six usually. Mm-hmm. And so the first person will draw five or six panels. And then you draw the first panel, and then there's a timer, and when the timer runs out, you pass it on, and the next person does the next part of the story, and you just pass them around. Jess tries to come up with fun and creative ways to make it different. Like the last time we did it, he'd bought packages of googly eyes, and so we had to use the googly eyes in each panel.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it was really fun. But the last time we did it, it was like the third anniversary, so the third year that we've been doing this. So Jess had gone to, I don't know, it was some self-publishing like show or conference or thing, kind of like a mini Comic-Con.
Okay.
But with not a lot of people.
Hence mini.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he did zines. You know what zines are? They're typically
bigger than Tijuana Bibles.
They're little magazines or comics. They're typically just run off on a copying machine and then assembled by hand.
On one sheet of paper.
Usually, yeah.
You fold it all fancy.
Uh-huh.
Cut it in three places.
You can still get an 8-page comic out of it.
Oh, that's cool.
So he did a bunch of like these spooky ones for some Halloween-themed thingy that he went to. And so he was reading stories out of those to us at this comic jam. And that was one of the stories he read.
Really? Oh, that's funny.
So I was really surprised. Yeah. So it was after that I started digging through my records. I'm like, oh, I've got Jess coming over. I'm going to dig through my Halloween records and see what I can do for found audio on the show. And I found that story. So I don't know who the interview will be for this episode because I don't know where it's going to fall. But we'll put an interview right here. So we call this part of the podcast I Tick. We ask everyone the same six questions in an effort to figure out what makes them tick. I interviewed my grandfather. I forgot to have him introduce himself. So this is Glenn Ashcraft at his home in Rexburg, Idaho. And he served in World War II and he was a carpenter most of his life. And he is 91 years old. His birthday is on Christmas Eve. So here is Glenn Ashcraft. Tell us your earliest memory.
Well, my earliest memories are when we were living in the house across the street from that Moody school. I remember riding a tricycle on the sidewalk. I remember my dad talking about Catherine, my older sister, burning the chicken coop down. That's about all I remember from that.
That's pretty good. Tell us a story from your childhood that has influenced your life.
Well, one thing that has really been an influence in my life was when I was 6 years old. I think it was the 24th of July, that the family had gone to the forest, which was 15 miles away from where we lived. We were going to a place called Mud Springs, which wasn't too far, just inside the forest border. And we had a Model T Ford, and we got up into the forest. And we came to a hill, and the Model T didn't make it up the hill. The way they were built, if you got on too much of an angle and your gas was low, then the gas wouldn't flow out of the tank into the car. So the car stopped. And while we all got out, and while he was getting the car turned around, my older sister, Catherine, went up ahead and off to the side. She found a tree that had been grown up, and it kind of weathered the storms of the winter, and that it was kind of crooked. Well, she came back and she wanted me to go see that tree. So I think Mira and Catherine and I probably went back and see that tree. And as we were going back to where the folks were, I thought, Well, no sense of me going this long way around while I just take a shortcut. I go on an angle here and get over there. So I took off on this, what I thought was a shortcut. And someone said, you're going the wrong way. Of course, I didn't believe him. I kept going. I went. And I didn't find him. I didn't find anybody. And I changed my direction and went another way. I still couldn't find anybody. I changed direction several times, walked ways, and never found anybody. Finally, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a while. I thought, you know, I ought to pray about this. So I knelt down by a big old pine tree and I prayed. And I guess I gave that same prayer that I gave at night. And I said, guide my footsteps home. And I got up from the prayer and I was following a cow trail down there. They had cows that they put up in the forest during the summer to forage during the summer. I was following this trail. I came around the corner and there were some cows right ahead of me eating in the grass. So I thought, well, I won't bother those cows. I turned to the left and I went around them. And almost immediately, it was light up ahead of me. And I came to the edge of the forest and looked out over the valley. Way off in the distance, I saw the Moody Elevator, the grain elevator, which was only about probably 3/4 mile from where we lived. I thought, okay, I'll go there. So I headed towards that elevator. Hadn't gone far until I came to a road, and I started going up this road one way, and something said to me, you're going the wrong way. I know now that if I had kept going, I would have found the folks. It couldn't have been more than a 1/2 mile away. But I said, guide my footsteps home. So I went back in the fields and followed through the fields. I went through several plowed grounds, some grain fields. One field had some grain growing in the middle of it. We probably got a lot of extra water in the spring. And it was higher than I was. I was only 6 years old, and I was kind of small for my age. And I had to go away, and then I'd stop and jump up and look to see if I was still going the right direction. And finally, I came to a kind of a ditch that had been made by the spring runoff waters. And I didn't want to get down in it. Didn't know how I'd get out if I got in it. So I followed it along to the left for a ways. And I came to a crossing, and across this crossing, and I saw a house sitting there, and I was thirsty. And I thought, I wonder if I'd get a drink of water if I went to that house. So I started over towards the house, and then I saw this dog sitting there on the front porch. He didn't bark or anything, but I didn't know if I wanted to contend with him or not. So I turned around and went back to the road that went up the hill. I went up the hill where I came to a road. This was a well-traveled road. I started down this road. I hadn't taken more than 3 or 4 steps when a car came around the corner and ahead of me. My mother had always told me, beware of strangers. So on the right side of me, there was a fence. The fence was down, but there was large sagebrushes growing there on that. So I went through those sagebrush out into a plowed field. And that car stopped. The driver, he motioned for me to come over there. I stood there and shook my head. And he says, don't you know who I am? No. So I'm Claude Graham. I'm the barber in Teton. He said, I've cut your hair several times. He said, I saw your father up in the forest. I was up there getting some firewood. And he asked me to go to town and get some men to come look for you. And that's what I've got in the car. So then I went over and got in the car with them. And they gave me a drink of water out of a water bag that they had. And I guess I went to sleep, because the next thing I knew, they had stopped and were opening the gate to get back into the forest area. And then they drove a short distance and stopped. And my mother was standing at the side of the car. And Claude says, look who we've got here. And I looked up there and my mother saw me. She was pretty happy. I had been gone for 5 hours, and the place where they had picked me up was 11 miles from where I'd started, 4 miles from home. So they saved enough watermelon for me, so I had some watermelon and my sandwiches, and then went home. That's one of the remembrances that I remember.
It's a good story. Share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
I don't know, I've always liked good songs. Never. Brother Don used to buy him a little magazine every month that had all the top songs in it, and he'd sing them, and I learned a lot of those things. But I never had any songs I remember that I particularly liked that well.
Okay. Is there any other kind of media that's been influential to you?
Well, probably is, but I can't think of it right now.
Okay. Sure thing.
One thing I like to do was memorize poetry.
Okay.
And I think about the first one I ever memorized was one of Edgar Lee Guest's, which was, my pa said so. He said, "Foxes can talk if you know how to listen. Owls have big eyes that sparkle and glisten. Bears can turn flip-flops and climb elm trees and steal the honey away from the bees. But they never mind winter because they don't freeze. My pa said so. Wolves ain't so bad if you treat them all right. They're as fond of the game as they are in a fight. Most all the animals found in the wood ain't always ferocious. Most times they're good. The trouble is mostly they're misunderstood. My pa said so. Girls is afraid of a snake, but boys ain't. Why, they holler and run, and sometimes they faint. The boys be framed to be shined that way. When all the snake wants to do is to play, you've got to believe every word that I say. Because my pa said so. Maybe foxes don't talk to such people as you. Bears never show you the tricks they can do. But I know the stories I'm telling are true. Because my pa said so.
That's a good one.
I know other sightings too. One I give a lot of reunions is Uncle Josh in the barber shop, which I got from the old record, selling a record player we had when I was a kid. And I used to play that over and over again until I knew it. And then when I started high school, I remember learning about Gunga Din. And along the way, one spring after he came home from the army, the brother and I, Don and I, were thinning beets that were on that lot where the Teton Church sits now. And always thinning beets where I learned the cremation of Sam McGee. Then, when we went to one of the army reunions back in Branson, Missouri, they found out that I knew some of these recordings, of these, you know, so they had me give them. And one of the fellows there was kind of in charge. He says, "Why don't you learn Casey at the Bat?" I hadn't even heard of Casey at the Bat. So I came home and looked it up in one of the books I had. I learned it during that summer. So the next year when I went to the reunion, I could do Casey at the Bat for him.
Can you do the Uncle Joshua one?
Well, we ain't got no barber in Pumpkin Center, so I used to shave myself. Then Nancy took my razor to cut her corns with, and I quit shaving and raised whiskers. And Nancy, she cut my hair with the sheep shears. And when she got done with me, I was a sight. I looked like an escaped convict in a fur coat that had bolted. And Nancy, she cut my hair in all styles all at once. She'd cut it pompadour on one side, shingle it on the other, cut it curly behind, get itching hair down my back, cut me with the shears, and then fuss at me cause I wouldn't hold still. Well, to save myself torture, I took to wearing my hair long. Guess I'd been doing it yet, but for one thing. There was a show come to Pumpkin Center, and most nigh on the whole village went to see it. Well, there was a magic bar there, and he asked for someone to come up on the platform and help him. And like a darn fool, I done it. Oh, yes, I helped him a right smart. This fellow turned me around facing all the folks. And Nancy said it was just sinful what he done to me. He took a pack of cards and two bottles of whiskey out of my pocket, an old hen and a dozen eggs out of my hair, a rat trap, two rabbits, and a pigeon out of my whiskers. I never felt so foolish in all my born days. And Nancy said, my face was so red, she was afeard my whiskers would take fire, while I was the laughingstock of the whole community. And I just calculated, the first chance I got, I was going to get my hair cut by a regular barber. But I'd let a bird dog look over it first. Might be some more chickens in it. Well, while I was in New York, I figured it'd be a good time to have it done. I looked all over New York for a barber shop. Guess I'd been looking, yet a feller hadn't told me. The Tonsorial Emporium meant barber shop. Gosh, they do have the darndest names for things. I went into one of those emporiums and told a feller what I wanted, and a whole flock of them went to work on me. One fellow went to blacken my boots. Another went to cleaning my clothes. A gal went to whittling my fingernails. And the barber went to talking. Gosh, how that feller could talk. He told me six funny stories. He told me what horse would win the race, how the ball game would come out, what Congress was going to do, and who was going to be the next president. Then asked me if I wanted him to go over the chin music again. I told him I heard him the first time. He cut my hair until he got tired. And then he singed me like a chicken. He shaved my whiskers in the middle and dyed them black. Tied my face up in hot rags. And then turned the buzz fan on me. He asked me 4 times to have some rum. And when he couldn't get me a drink, he put it on my hair. Well, when I got out of there, I never was so duded up in all my born days. And when I got home, it was a full minute for Nancy knowed me. And for a whole week, I was a stranger in my own house. The dog tried to bite me. The horse kicked at me. The cow wouldn't let me milk her. And I couldn't get within gunshot of anything on the place. And when we went to church, the minister preached a sermon about Delilah cutting Samson's hair. And everybody knowed he was a hint at me. Well, the black has worn out of my whiskers, and my hair's growed out. And yesterday, I saw Nancy sharpening the sheep shears. So I suppose in a day or so, I'll be looking natural again.
Excellent. What's been your passion in life?
What?
Your passion in life.
Carpenter work.
Carpentry work?
Yes.
What is it about carpentry work that you love?
I don't always like to be out pounding nails. Spent all my life doing that. After the flood, why, Glenn Westergaard, he didn't get me to come back and help him. And I spent 6 years here in Rexburg, Rigby and Mud Lake and so forth, building houses. And Glenn, he used to come visit me every once in a while. And one time when he was here, I said to him, you know, when I retire, I think what I'd like to do is go up and get several cabins in the Island Park area to build. Get them framed up in the summertime. Then in the winter, go up there and finish them. Now, before the flood, I had bought 3 snowmobiles. And they were up to Reed's place in the chicken coop. We didn't have any chickens in there. When the flood hit, they probably took those away. They were on a trailer. Took those away. So after the flood, I replaced them with 3 new machines. And so we had those machines. And I told Glenn, I said, what I'd like to do is do the finish work in the winter, and then I can do some snowmobiling, too, while I was up there. And he says, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do it. I said, okay. I was going to retire on my birthday, 24th of December. And Glenn died on the 15th of December. So that put an end to that idea.
What makes you tick?
Well, there's nothing else to do, so I have to get up. Tired of laying in bed.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
The village blacksmith. Under a spreading chestnut tree, the village blacksmith stands. The smith, a mighty man, is here, with large and sinewy hands. And the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is long and slick and black. His face is like the tan. His brow is wearing honest sweat, and he earns whatever he can. Looks the whole world in the face, for oh, not any man. Day in, day out, from day of morn till night, you hear his bells roar. Hear him swing his mighty sleds with measures to and fro. Like the pops and singing, ringing a evening bell when evening suns are low. Children coming home from school look in the open door. They love to see the flaming forge and hear the bells roar and catch the flaming sparks that fly like chaff from the flashing forge. He goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. He hears the parson pray and preach. And hears his daughter's voice sing in the village choir. It makes his heart rejoice. It sounds to him like her mother's voice, singing in paradise. And he must think of her once more, how in the grave she lies. And with a harsh, rough hand, he wipes a tear from out his eye. Toiling, rejoicing, sorrowing, onward through life he goes. Each morning sees some work begin. Each evening sees it close. Something ventured, something gained, has earned a night's repose. Thanks to you, my favorite friend, for the message thou hast wrought. For on the flaming forge of life each memories are wrought, and on the sounding anvil shaped each burning deed and thought. You haven't heard that before.
No, I haven't. It's a new one to me.
Thank you, Grandpa. So on the very first episode of the show, Jess brought in some found audio, and he played The Cremation of Sam McGee, which I enjoy that story, but that reading of it is not my favorite, because my grandpa recites it from memory.
Oh, yep.
And that's my favorite reading of it.
Yep, yep.
And so I got him to do that when I was up there, so I was going to put him on the podcast doing Sam McGee for the anniversary show.
That's cool.
There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have her secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the morn off Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. And why he left his home in the South to roam around the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, yet the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell. Though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over that Dawson Trail. And talk of your cold. Through the parka's fold, it stabbed like a driven nail. To her eyes we closed, the lashes froze, till sometimes we couldn't see. It weren't no fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. That very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, the dogs were fed and the stars overhead were dancing heel and toe. He looks at me, and "Cap," says he, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess, but I want to know before I go, you won't refuse my last request." Now a pal's last need is a thing to heed, and I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the break of dawn. But oh, he was ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And for nightfall, a corpse all that remained Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death. And I hurried on hard driven, with a corpse half hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brain, but you promise true, and it's up to you to cremate my last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid. The trails have their own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were numb, in my heart, how I loathed that load. And every night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring howled out their woes to the homeless snows, oh, how I cursed that thing. And every day, that piece of clay seemed to heavier grow. Though on we went, though the dogs were spent, and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in. And I'd often sing to that hapless thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Then we came to the shores of Lake LaBarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, and it's on a trice. It was called the Alice May. I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. "And here," said I with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium." Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel up higher. The furnace roared and the black smoke soared, such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal and stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I took a hike, 'cause I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled and the huskies howled. Wind began to blow. It was icy cold. Yet the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why. And the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I don't know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear. But the stars came out and danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked. It's time I And the door I opened wide. And there sat Sam, looking calm and cool in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile. And he said, "Please close that door, for it's warm in here, and I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and the storm. Since I left Plum Tree down in Tennessee, this is the first time I've been warm. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who boil for gold. And the arch trails of our secret tales would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the march of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee."
So, I find that I am pulled in a million different directions lately. I have completely lost focus as a person.
Oh, that's not good.
So, I used to be
poor very... Lies like, woo, you're just sympathetic.
I know, I understand how he feels.
So, I used to be... This was like from the time I was 5 years old till the time I graduated. I was like, I'm going to be an animator, mm-hmm. and I'm going to work for Disney. Mm-hmm. And it was the year before I graduated. So I had like 1 year of school left, mm-hmm. and Disney announced, hand-drawn animation is the past. We're not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. They sold off all their desks, most mm-hmm. of which were antiques,
oh, my goodness.
Shut down their traditional animation department. Oh, and they're like, we're only going to do computer animation from now on.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they had a test, a computer animation test that they gave to the old animators, and it was their way of weeding them out. They were going to fire all their old animators using it. But surprisingly, all their animators that had been around forever were surprisingly good at computer animation.
Cool.
Not surprising to me, but right. surprising to the mm-hmm. people in charge. So they ended up not being able to get rid of as many. But anyway, mm-hmm. At that point, I was like, I don't want to work for Disney anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I did tech support for 7 years because I didn't know what to do with my degree. Mm-hmm. And then that was draining my soul and mm-hmm. killing me as a mm-hmm. person.
Oh, yeah.
And
I thought tech support would make a good use of an animation degree.
That's what they're for, right?
I hated that job so much. Mm-hmm. I did that for far too long. Yeah. It was supposed to just be temporary, and then I just didn't have any gumption to go find anything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah. Right? That happens to a lot of people.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was horrible. They closed the department I was in, and then they put us in this... They're like, okay, we lost the MSN account, and so you're all going to go work for Cox Cable and be cable customer support.
Oh.
And they took us from the nice building that we were in, and they shoved us into this crappy building. And they brought in people from Cox Cable to train us, and these were the most...
Soulless and dead inside?
No, there's no PC way to put it. So I'm just not going to put it. As soon as that happened, and then they stuck me in the wrong department because I was in one of the top teams at the tech support place. I was supposed to be in the tech support area, and they stuck me in customer support. It was a mistake mm-hmm. that they chose not to fix. Mm-hmm. So I was stuck explaining bills to people. And if you were my wife, you would understand how badly I am explaining bills. I've screwed up the Discover bills so many times, I can't even... I'm horrible at reading bills to begin with. Mm-hmm. I was like, this doesn't make sense. I can't go like this. Just where does this number come from?
Colored box. It says pay this amount.
That's how I do it. That's how I do it. And then she gets on my case because she's like, we didn't actually owe that amount because we had this and this and this that we'd already gotten refunds on. And so that number was just the number when it got printed. But that's not the actual number that we owed.
Oh, it does get confusing.
Anyway, I was horrible at that job, and so I immediately started looking for another job, and I ended up in an equally bad job for me. I was working at Fidelity.
I would argue that if you didn't know how to do the job and were terrible at it and stressed out, you were probably perfect for that job.
It wasn't a mistake. Right?
You were the dream agent.
You were.
Cox Cable was like, people will talk to this guy, and then they will run screaming and not cancel the service because we have a monopoly.
Yeah, so I started looking for a job immediately, and I ended up at Fidelity Investments Life Insurance, explaining to people their annuities.
Oh my goodness.
And that was just supposed... That was a temp job. It was only supposed to last from September to December. I was only there a month, and they let me go because I sucked at it. I knew I sucked at it. They brought in some new temp agents, and the day they came in, they were like, okay, well... We need to let you go.
This isn't working for us.
Yeah. It was bad. They're like, we know we told you till December, but... Actually...
We're losing clients left and right here.
They weren't even, like, super upfront about it. They said, oh, we need you to come talk to us in our office. So we went to the office, and they said, well, we need you to go down to this office downstairs. So we go to this office downstairs, and then they're like, we're going to escort you from the building. I said, but I've got stuff up at my desk that's my personal property. And they're like, you can request it using this form.
My goodness.
None of it was that important.
Using this form.
It was so bad. Now, why was I saying that?
You're going every which
way. Oh, because I've lost direction in life. So after that, I ended up with hands-on tech support at UTA, which I actually really liked, because I'm good at that kind of tech support. Yeah. I'm not good over the phone. Mm-hmm. I'm good face-to-face when I can have my hands on the computer and actually be controlling it and not rely on the person that thinks of the CD tray as a cup holder. to be the hands and the eyes, right?
Right.
Click the start button. I'm staring at my keyboard, and I don't see it. Where's the start button you keep talking
about? It's just to press any key, but I can't find an any key on the keyboard. Yeah. Anyway, so I was doing that, and that was actually a fun job. I enjoyed that, and they let me do some graphics stuff while I was there, and I was actually kind of working my way in that direction, and then they had their first layoffs in 30 years.
Oh, man. Bummer.
And because of the job I had, my job description looked redundant. Mm-hmm. What I did wasn't redundant. Mm-hmm. And when my boss's boss got back from active duty... Mm-hmm. He was livid that they were letting me go.
Yeah.
And he was super livid that they made all the choices about who was going without him. Mm. And then made him do all the firings.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow.
But the whole point of that is that's what ended up making me go back to school. And I'm like, I'm going to be an animator, dang it. So I get another animation degree, right? And then I graduate and I'm like, I don't want to move to California. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. And I see all my friends that are in animation jobs and they'll work a place for like a year or 18 months or something. And then they're like, all right, we're done with this project. And they'll just lay them all off. Like super talented people, like people that are way more talented than I am. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, you're a dime a dozen. We can get somebody with this kind of talent anywhere. And I'm just like, yeesh. But I did get my love of audio there. And so I ended up in this job that I have now, which is awesome. But because it's like a really stable job and there's no real up, but I do get pay increases, like, which...
That's good.
It's good. It's they're not huge, but I'm usually in the top. They come in different tiers and I've been in the top tiers.
That's cool.
Each time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and... The perk is that I get to take classes, and I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And my family can all take classes for free, so I'm I'm staying in this job till all three of my girls have graduated.
That's cool. Right? Great, yeah.
So it's an awesome perk, but then I've got all these things I want to do, so I'm trying to learn guitar. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to do a podcast. Well, I am doing a podcast. And I did a webcomic for a year, and then my website broke, and so I haven't done that, but I need to get back to it. And then... I've been painting recently.
That's good.
And then
I saw your haul.
Yeah, there's more. I'll show you the others.
That's really cool.
And then I'm obsessed with surround sound recently. And I feel like I'm doing like so many... I'm digitizing the 8mm film, which is awesome. Oh. Anyway, I feel like I'm pulled in all these directions.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but they all pull me from the others. And so I don't feel like I'm excelling at any one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing, but I'm just feeling pulled in a million directions and I have no desire to stop it.
Yeah, and that's okay. I think that's just certain people's like personalities and it's not bad.
And that is one thing I do like about this job is where other jobs that I've had, it was like the grind, the same thing every day.
Routine is not for us.
This job I find that when I'm getting burnt out on a project, I can just hop over to another one. So I'm getting tired of doing interview videos. I can start scanning slides from the 40s and cleaning those up in Photoshop and whatnot. So that is nice. There's a lot of variety there. Mm-hmm. And the other nice thing is they think I'm a magician. They think
you are.
I had a rabbit, and now I just have a hat. And where did her rabbit go?
They everything that I do is so far beyond their understanding that it's magic to them.
Yeah.
I'm a miracle worker. And so there's no reason for them to even... The guy that had the job before me was there 10 years, so
okay.
It's nice and stable.
Yeah.
Richard, I've sawed my wife in half. The top half, I keep feeding it. The bottom half, I don't know how it's surviving. It's been 2 weeks. Can you put her back together?
It actually feels like that sometimes. All right, I think we should play one more song.
Okay.
And so...
You pick it.
So I have this on record, but I recently purchased it on Super Audio CD. So we're going to play it on Super Audio CD. This song is in surround sound. It's from 1972. And there was this... I don't see this much anymore, but back then it was like all the time. You'd buy a record and it was like some band leader or some artist. And he'd done all these songs that were other people's music. So that's what this is. This guy's Hugo Montenegro. And he was a band leader. And he did all kinds of albums that were just other people. He did covers of other people's songs. This is... Me and My Arrow, which is, I believe, Harry Nilsson. And this is the Hugo Montenegro crazy surround sound version.
Let it go, Pete.
Yo! Ah!
thinking, this isn't very Halloween. It just started with some circus music that circles around the room. Yeah, wait till it gets to the end. It's a little freaky.
Yeah.
Speaking of creepy clowns.
It's the same circus, but now Commissioner Gordon is in a lion cage naked.
Anything more you want to add?
I want Lorelei to tell spooky stories as well.
Spooky stories? I don't have any spooky stories. My hair, don't touch it.
Spooky stories from, you know.
What spooky stories do you like?
Your life.
I like me some vampires, but I don't really find that spooky. I
mean, elaborate.
I don't know. Bad at talking. I don't like humans in general.
You want to talk bad at talking? I'm bad at talking. And look, I do a podcast.
I assume your talking skills have improved over the course. No? Not at all?
Oh, okay.
See, what you don't realize is Richard's a really good editor.
Oh.
Like, really good.
So the editing saves the lack of talking skills?
Oh, yeah. Practically Rumpelstiltskin. You can spin straw into gold over and over again on a weekly basis.
Why would you want to do that, though?
So it sounds like you're confident and upbeat. I think everything's great all the time. And
I'm horrified at that thought.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to sound confident and upbeat. I live for being just monotone and slightly depressed.
Is that a request? Because I can cut your part out and not do the editing.
He can monotone you like you've never been monotone before.
Ooh, fun.
All right, if nobody has anything else
I
to add.
I have two spooky stories.
Okay, tell us your spooky stories.
The first one.
One story at a time. And do you want some headphones?
No.
Should we get a flashlight? Turn the lights off? You can hold it on your face.
Okay, so I don't believe in people's stories where they say they see... where they say they've seen a spirit or something. I just don't believe that. I don't know. I just think people are too dramatic and they just see things. When I was like 17, I was working at Taco Time and I was very like non-dramatic kid, like no silly stuff. It was just, that's how I was that year. Yeah, it was really boring and I didn't believe in, you know, certain things. I just thought people are kind of morons or whatever. I heard about this, this job at Taco Time, so I was hired, and they're like, oh, have you seen the Taco Time ghost? I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever, ha, 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 you know, whatever, I don't believe in that stuff. One night, and this is coming from me and this other girl who wasn't silly either, we were closing Taco Time, and we were kind of facing our backs to each other, and we both look at the same time. I caught her ponytail looking that the same way, you know? And we saw this black figure just walk right across, like, really fast, you know? And I'm like, oh, you know, I just didn't think of anything of it. And she's like, she pauses because she was in the middle of a story. And she's like, oh my gosh, I just saw something weird. And I'm like, did you see that too? And she just starts to scream. And I mean, just right now I'm getting the chills because that is the only thing that I've ever seen that was almost maybe a ghost. It could have been like a shadow or something, but it was a figure. It was a human figure that was dark that just walked right across. And I'm like, this has to be true because I'm not a silly person. She wasn't a silly person. And she was a witness. She saw what I saw. It was like the weirdest thing. So I'm like, I guess there is a Taco Time ghost. I don't know. But that I never forgot that because I just don't believe in those things or whatever, you know. And when I saw that, I'm like, okay, I must be a believer now.
You saw a shadow person.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was like, I mean, I didn't have a face. It was just this dark figure that walked right across. And we both saw it. And we were both, wow, okay. And we really didn't talk about it after that. It was so weird. But I have another story. Right before I met Joshua, so it was like around 2013, I lived in this Victorian house. And the landlord was a really nice guy, and his whole family used to live there. And I asked him, I'm like, why did you guys move out? This is like an epic house. And he's like, oh, whatever. He's like, I don't know. You know, I'll ask my mother-in-law. So I did. I asked his mother-in-law. She was living there at the time. And she was saying, oh, she's like, we used to see things in that house, like spirits. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. That's a bunch of crap. Why do people talk like this? Like, it just really bothered me, you know? And she's like, no, I'm serious. There was this little girl spirit. And I'm like, okay, whatever, you know? And I just kind of let her say the story. Well, one night I was walking down the hall and I see this glowing figure walking down, and I had a purse on me and I tried to throw my purse at it because it scared me so bad. The purse went back and hit me in the face, and then the personage started to scream too. And I'm like, what is going on? She's like, Bonnie Jean, why are you throwing things at me? And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, what is this, you know? And it ended up being my roommate And she's tiny. She's a short little thing, skinny. And she was wearing a nightgown and her cell phone was on, walking down the hall, and it scared the living crap out of me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I thought you were like that little girl that lady was talking about. She's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, who wears a nightgown? It's like 2015. Like, why are you wearing a nightgown? You know, nobody wears those anymore. It was just so funny.
Nightgowns are great.
I guess so, but it was just kind of funny. I never saw a spirit in that house at all. I don't think there really was one. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of a funny story. But the only one, that one Taco Time thing that happened, that truly scared me because I've never experienced anything like that before. So those are my spooky stories.
Awesome. Now I have to get this out before Halloween.
Yeah.
I remember a spooky thing that happened in my childhood.
Tell us your spooky thing.
Jesse's basement is totally haunted.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
More details.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting there. I'm just going to preface it with the fact that it's haunted.
Gonna get you some anticipation going.
You know, set it up for
She's a storyteller, yo.
I think it was like, when I was like 5 to 7 maybe, and I was, you know, playing in Jesse's basement with her and Gwen and Gwen's friends that were over. You know, we were playing, you know, house or something, a generic child game, and we had this little toy cash register, and it was like on a desk next to the wall, and we were, you know, playing with it, and then we, you know, ran into the childhood argument of, I don't want to play this game like that, and so we're all like crowded around together, and we're all just like yelling at each other, and then suddenly, just, you know, for no apparent reason, cash register flies across the room and into the wall.
Oh, that's scary.
And we all just stop. We just turn and look at it. We're just like, nope. And then we went outside and just, you know, never talked about it again.
Scary.
And, you know, occasionally when I'd sleep over at Jesse's house and we'd just, you know, be asleep and everything's fine, and then you do the random thing where you wake up at 3 a.m. and then there's just, you know, things walking into the room.
Oh, gosh.
And they just sit there for a bit, and then they turn around and leave and go down the hallway. Then they come back.
Things?
Oh.
Just, you know, shadows that are clearly on the wall, but there's nothing there, but you can see the outline of, that's a really tall person, or, why? Just, you know, just sometimes, you know, just like shadow arms would just like creep into doorways and then come back. Because Jessie had a window, like, there was like the window and then her bed, and so, like, there was a streetlight right outside of their house, and so that light would go through the window, and so you could just like get shadows just like on that wall. And so it was just like, ah, yes, creepiness.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
Oh my
goodness. Such fun, creepy hauntedness of Jesse's bedroom.
But only one random thing flying across the room.
That was in Gwen's room, and it was really, really weird. And we never talked about it again, and then nothing bad ever really happened. But you know, being in that room is terrifying. So no.
So one time when I was probably 4.5, I woke up in the night because I had to pee. And as I was creeping across the bedroom silently, there was a giant black dog with glowing red eyes standing in the corner of my bedroom. And I was terrified. I've always been terrified of dogs. And I was like, should I back up and away from it? Or will that draw its attention? Because I don't know if it's seen me yet. And I stood in the middle of the floor, frozen, unable to move for hours until the sun came up. And I realized it was a laundry basket.
That's amazing.
Was there a shiny thing in the laundry basket?
I imagined the red eyes, I'm sure. Oh. I had a very active imagination as a small child.
All right, well, thanks for coming in and recording.
Hey, thanks for having us over.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you some of the fame things.
That's a headphone.
Put your headphones back on.
Why?
So you can feel included.
And hear the, you know, empty white noise that exists sort of in the background.
Oh, that's because I forgot to turn this down.
Now there's no white noise.
It was my friend and you killed it. How could you?
White noise matters.
Exactly.
You say so.
Now Richard's got to edit out a cough.
That's okay.
Oh, no.
Andy's got to edit me talking about editing out a cough. He's got to talk about me editing.
He's going to talk about cough. It now. Oh, no. Whatever shall he do?
Don't get into the white noise matters, because that was awesome.
Ridiculous Russian nested doll situation.